Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening? It's the Patriot Nation Radio.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
What's happening, folks? It's the Patriot Nation Radio Show. It's 9 o'clock. It's Monday, the 20th of January. Martin Luther King Day, great day for civil rights and remembering civil rights. Seeing what took place in Virginia today, a beautiful display of standing up for our civil rights took place. We'll talk a little bit about that. But of course, our featured guest right here at the top of the hour in just a minute, Army Lieutenant, First Lieutenant, Clint Lawrence, recently pardoned by our great president, President Donald J. Trump, number 45. And we'll talk all about it right here in just a couple of seconds. Check this out, and I'll be back in 2 minutes, 20 seconds.
Thank you for listening to Patriot Nation Radio, 347-637-3942.
Attention conservatives. Big social media is targeting conservatives like you and me in an effort to silence us and the truth. The free speech social media that you have waited for is here at LibertyRush.com. No longer do you have to be distracted by fake news. Join the war on fake news at LibertyRush.com. The official alternative with no libtard rhetoric. Guaranteed. LibertyRush.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Bray, America's favorite patriotic rocker, and you are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Network.
I never knew about at a funeral or like the last day when an officer has passed, and they actually go and the dispatch will close basically down the radio air for emergency only, and then she will call the badge number or he will call the badge number from dispatch, and obviously there's never an answer. Brave soul has passed away in the line of duty. Felt like something needed to be done or to recognize that, and that's what the song is about. Basically, it's about an officer who's gone down in the line of duty, and he's given his all, and when they do reach out for the last call, he answers back, and these are his words. And one thing a lot of people don't know, I know a lot of cops in and out of uniform. They are very human, just like you and I. Pick and choose what laws they uphold, but they have to uphold the ones that are put in place by our representatives. And our representatives are the people that we put in office. And the same people that are out there with their signs are the same people that are putting lunatics in office. Here's the wake-up call, people. Don't come down on the men and women in blue for doing their job. Come down on your representatives for passing these BS laws and get involved in your political on a local level and fix what the problem is. Fix the problems in our laws today. Get involved in your local politics and get moving. Get moving in America. Become a citizen. A citizen doesn't mean you sit back and collect a paycheck from the government. A citizen means you are a part of the government, a part of the citizenry, a part of the voting and voicing public. And that's what I think the song says more over than anything else. And if people want to hear it, because I know they do, please go to Dave Bray USA right now on Facebook. That's DaveBray USA.
That's right, folks. DaveBrayUSA.com, a great friend of ours here on the show. A friend of mine is contacting me real fast. I got to help her out. She wants to listen to the show. So let me tell her what to do here. Click on this link. There you go, my friend. You're in. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we will be speaking with recently pardoned American hero, Clint Lawrence, Lieutenant Clint Lawrence, back in 2013, under bogus circumstances. He was convicted on 2 counts of second-degree murder for killing the enemy on the battlefield under the rules and engagement of the previous administration of Barack Hussein Obama, who in many instances, if you needed to engage the enemy, you had to, call the boss. Hold on a second. don't attack yet. Let me call the boss. Hello, Commander. Permission to engage the enemy. They're closing fast. Help. And before you can get permission to engage the enemy, they engage you because they're not following any rules of engagement. And you get killed. Or you survive and watch your buddies get killed. And then come home without a limb and suffering from PTSD and being forgotten by the horrific former administration who turned its back on many, many, many of our brave heroes from the battlefield. It's a very sore subject with me, how our veterans are treated. I've never served, and I am so thankful for the 1% of our population who would volunteer their services and put their life in harm's way so that I can come on this show and blab and tell you how I feel, and hopefully I can bring a message of truth to the bogus lies and the twists of the mainstream media that you get so much these days. You know, you turn on the news, and it's bullcrap. And I know it's bullcrap because I talk to the people in the stories. I see the stories on the news, and I start searching. And I bring them on the show. And we get the truth from the right from the horse's mouth. We don't listen to the media. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to, although Clint did get many opportunities to tell his story the way it happened, but mainstream media on the fake news side, Communist News Network, and as our good friend Sean Hannity likes to call it, MSDNC, conspiracy TV with Rachel Maddow and those clowns over there will twist and sensationalize the lies that they're telling to push an agenda. And that I believe that agenda is to take control of everything. They want to be in complete control. The leftists have become the party of do as I say, not as I do. And that's it. So without further ado, I'm going to bring in our featured guest. Went through a horrific trial. Guys in his platoon were offered immunity to testify. And we're going to get the whole story right now from our new fine friend, veteran, and American war hero to me, to someone like me. And believe me, I want to be the American that our veterans are proud to have served for. And you should strive to be that kind of American so that when they come back, they can feel proud that they put their ass on the line for you. Instead of coming back and having people like Jane Fonda be back on the television screens making millions when she should be in prison. She should be in Leavenworth, not our fine American veteran soldiers like our featured guest tonight, Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. Welcome to the show, Lieutenant. Can I call you that? Yellow. We're live. Where'd he go? Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here on Patriot Nation Radio Show tonight.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen. Give a warm welcome to our featured guest, Clint Lawrence. Sometimes I get long-winded in my monologues. I'm sorry if that was a little long.
Well, I tell you, it's really a good day when we have a week behind us like we just had with everything getting done in Washington that got done despite this impeachment nonsense. We've got a lot of good stuff going on right now.
Yes. Isn't the president, like, unbelievably amazing? Now, here's a guy who's been under constant attack since day one, as their impeachment stuff started. He's got the tax cuts through. He's got miles and miles of border fence up. He's got the embassy in Israel moved. He's got a preemptive deal with China. They're buying $200 billion worth of goods. Stock market soaring, record unemployment, amazing stuff, all while under attack. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And one thing, Mark, one of the things that I would like to just real briefly touch on is I really appreciate you bringing in the mental health PTSD piece when you introduced me. That's something that we in the military,
yeah,
we see as something that we don't want to be associated with, because in the military, it's all about bravado and it's all about being strong and tough because we are the world's greatest military. So one of the things that,
right,
I think I've been on, you know, dozens and dozens of radio shows in the last several weeks, and you're the first one to think of that and to bring that up. So I want to say thank you for that, because there are these wounds in all of our warriors who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan that people don't see that exist. And that's something that we've really got to consider as a population.
And one of the things that I say a lot, it burns my ass to see it, excuse my French, but when people say, "Oh, look at that guy, he's just a bum on the street. Who cares about it? Why are you going to help that guy?" It says, "Homeless veteran, please help." He chose to go to the battlefield. Why? Who cares? Why is he even doing that? Why doesn't he just stop drinking and party or doing that? And I say, you know why? He's in that situation. And I lay it out plainly. I don't mince words, Clint. That man is probably watched his comrades on the battlefield get blown to bits. Then he came home suffering, and the VA turned their back on him. And the only thing he has is the almighty bottle to kill the pain of the PTSD that he suffers with every single day. And he can't get help and is lost. His family has turned his back on his country. Everybody turns their back on him, and yet there he is. What does he have? So give the guy a beer if he wants one, or buy him a burger. Do something.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you there. I will say that in my own recent experience, that President Trump's administration has really cracked down on the VA and really started to bring it to a world-class organization. But of course, there's decades of broken policies and broken buildings and broken staffs and healthcare staff and so on and so forth that have to be ripped out, and that have to be purged from the system. So, you know, with a good, strong conservative administration and who cares about the military, that kind of stuff is going to be fixed. And I can see it being fixed here where I am in Florida right now. And so I think that's something that's extremely important. But, you know, you talked about mental health a lot, and that's extremely important because, you know, we have an organization called United American Patriots, and they're – I call them UAP.org. It's for short because it's such a long name. But what UAP does is they advocate for warriors in the world's greatest military who go over into these combat zones and who are railroaded by administrations like the Obama administration. Mark, I'll tell you, the Obama administration, as you mentioned, really wreaked havoc upon our military. It really did. And it's just – It did, and that's one of the things you have whenever you have a commander-in-chief with no idea what in the world to do in terms of the military and how to lead the military. And so one of the good things about President Trump is – and look, I don't work for President Trump's campaign, but I do have something in my heart called loyalty. And so if somebody is doing the right thing and they do the right thing towards me, then I'm going to be loyal to them. And so I believe that President Trump is doing the right thing for this country, and he certainly did the right thing toward me. And so one of the things that I try to, you know, convey to people when they say, "Well, you're just a Trump lackey, you just want him to get reelected," well, I'm like, "You're darn right I do. Of course I do, because the country's going in the right direction right now." And so the homeless veterans that you mentioned and that we all see on the streets, and I know some. There was a homeless veteran that wrote to me while I was in Fort Leavenworth. And so it's really the veteran community really understands it better than anybody else what the struggles are. But there's a small population within the veteran community of combat veterans who actually saw combat. There are a lot of folks who go over to Afghanistan and Iraq, but there are very, very few who actually fight and see real combat. And so that small community is where what you're talking about. It's what you, it's the people that you're talking about, the homeless people on the street and so on and so forth. Because I tell you, mental health is, like you said, mental health and PTSD, it is a very serious thing. It will stop you dead in your tracks. And you can, you know, I'm 6 foot tall and 200 pounds, and I work out every single day, but it'll stop me in my tracks. And it does stop me in my tracks, because it's something that sneaks up on you, and it's a silent enemy that'll take you down if you don't watch it. And there's nothing you can do. There's nothing at all you can do to get away from it. And so that's something that I really appreciate you bringing that up. That's something that a lot of the combat veterans in this country can appreciate.
I was touched early by stuff like that. When I was a kid, the Vietnam War ended, and a lot of the guys were coming back. And one of my neighbors was a shell-shocked guy. That's what they called it back then. They called it shell shock. They didn't call it PTSD. And he was very nervous anytime there was a loud sound, and he stuttered all the time. And then fast forward a few years, I was probably 10 when I met him. And then fast forward another 5 years when I was in high school, 10th grade, a friend of ours, father, he was a Vietnam veteran. And we were all sitting in his house, and we were watching TV. We were sitting on the couch, and his father just jumped up and started screaming and yelling, "Incoming, incoming, hit the deck." And he dove behind the couch. He's like, "Get down, get down," screaming like he's on the battlefield in his living room. And it was really, at that point in my life, I was a young, impressionable kid. I was like, holy mackerel, it made a big impression on me right then and there. Like, that we got to always help these guys and remember these guys. Like, we can't allow this to be going on to these. And I was a kid, and I was thinking like that. So
I tell you, Mark, one of the things I lament about a lot is that veterans and, you know, combat veterans in this country, we do not want people to feel sorry for us or come to us and say thank you and come up to us in supermarkets and hug us and so on and so forth. I don't want that, right? What I want people to do is I want people to take real constructive action, and instead of just saying thank you for your service, take some action on that. And look in and see what kind of accountability is being held on the congressional level in Washington, D.C. Look at your state level and the state legislatures and your state capitals and see what your states are doing for the veterans that are in your state. But there's a lot that we can do to hold the government organizations and the nonprofit organizations like UAP.org and all of these organizations that are there to help and that are trying to help fix this problem. There's a lot we can do to contribute to them and to contribute to the fixing the problem. And so that's something that I'll be honest with you. I struggle. Okay. I struggle just like a lot of people, but it doesn't help me at all. And I don't get any comfort at all with someone coming up to me and saying, thank you for your service. It just frustrates me. And at a certain point, I think to myself, okay, they think they're just doing the right thing. But at the end of the day, I'm like, you're just wasting your time. Because what I want you to do is I want you to get on your computer and see what things are going on in Austin, what things are going on in Albany, what things are going on in Tallahassee, what things are going on in your state capitals where, you know, your legislatures are either helping to fix the problem or hurting to fix the problem. And then what's going on in Washington, D.C.?
I'm here in the Sunshine State of Florida, and our governor is amazing, and I think that our veterans are in great hands with him and the president working hand in hand. I think Florida is going to really be in good shape when it comes to taking care of our veterans.
I absolutely agree with you, and I'll tell you, Mark, that is the number one reason why about 3 weeks ago I moved to Florida, and that is because of Governor DeSantis and his leadership and the relationship with President Trump. And the Florida legislature and the sunshine laws that we have here. And, you know, one of the first thing I did, you know, I'm officially moving here within the last couple of days, getting all my stuff here and everything. So I'm trying to get everything, you know, over here. But that is the main reason why I came here, is because there are good conservative policies here where it makes sense to live here, because you can live here and you can be truly free. But the rest of the country is not like this. There are some states, but the rest of the country is not like this. So even the great state of Texas, where I come from, it's not like this at all. So I think you're 100% right, Marvy. It's very important that we identify the potential solutions that we put forth in our state capitals and in Washington in terms of how we help our veterans. Instead of just going up and shaking their hand and saying thank you for your service, you know, do something about it.
Amen. And I'll tell you what, I try to advocate for you guys as much as possible. I had great groups on. We have a group right here in our area. I'm just north of Tampa, called K9 Partners for Patriots. And they are doing amazing things. They rescue service. They rescue dogs from kill shelters and train them to become service dogs for veterans with PTSD and other needs for service dogs. They're amazing.
Wow.
I had them come on. Operation First Response. They help with financial issues for guys that are trying to get back on their feet. And a couple other great groups. There's a guy here in Florida who started a veterans moving company, and he hires only veterans, and they help veterans move around. And I had this gentleman, Gonzalo Duran, Devil Dogs USA out of New York. He was a homeless veteran, and he was like, what am I going to do? I can't be homeless. And he built this great organization called Devil Dogs USA and got himself off the streets. And I try to bring these kind of people on the show because they're advocating and helping their brothers and sisters. And we give them a voice and we give them a platform to try and raise a few dollars for their groups and their organizations and their campaigns and their causes. Because, like I said earlier, I never served. So I try to do what I can to, because I don't have money. So I do everything I can to try and help get money to these places by having shows with them and featuring them on the show. Because it's all I got. It's all I got, you know. And at least I'm trying.
That makes two of us. And I certainly appreciate that. There's just so much going on out there. And, you know, one way to really, you know, give back to our veteran community out there is to go out and find these organizations like you talked about that help with veterans, and not only that give them money and so on. So there's an organization called Operation 300 right here in Florida. And what they do is they help with the children of people who have been killed in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they give them hope and promise and so on and so forth. And so you have all kinds of different organizations out there, like you just mentioned, you know, the K-9 organization. There's all kinds of different organizations out there. You don't have to, you know, the organization that I am very passionately involved in is UAP.org. But look, you may not be you may not want to be, you know, you may be an attorney during the day, so you may not want to look at legal stuff, you know, legal issues and stuff at night. Maybe you want to look at stuff with, you know, Wounded Warrior type stuff or something like that. But whatever it is that you are passionate about, I know that you can – I'm very confident that you can find – and this is to your listeners. I'm very confident that you can find your organization out there that fits in with what you are passionate about. And then I just came from a VFW meeting tonight, and I'm just sitting there looking at all these people, and I'm listening to them. I'm like, there are a lot of great Americans in this room. And I'm just telling you, there are so many opportunities out there. Just like you just mentioned, Mark, for your listeners, there's so many opportunities out there to get involved. And to understand that we are in a war with an ideology. We're not in a war with a country. We're at war with an ideology. You know, the jihad ideology is one that it hates America. And so no matter what, we're always going to be their enemy. And it doesn't matter. You know, we have people joining the army right now who were not even alive on 9/11. Just because they're joining the army, just because they're American citizens, they are automatically hated by these people. And so these people are over there. They're all over the world, and they're targeting us. They're targeting the United States of America because we have something that they want, and that is the freedom of a free people and a free republic. And they want that, right? And so that makes us a huge target. So the way I look at it is we've got to protect that. If you have something that is worth having, you protect it, right? And this is my opinion. I believe that the people who are not protecting that, the people who are just going to work at the bank every day or just going to work, you know, at the bakery every day, they can still do their part in protecting this nation. And what that means is the people like the police officers and the firefighters and the military members who are protecting this country every day, you show them thanks by giving back and getting involved in one of these organizations or doing what you do and get on the radio and talk about it. So I think that's something that's what's so beautiful about our country is that we all come together as one American family whenever we meet, get something done. And guys, we're in this war. We're in this ideological war that's never going to end. It's not. It's just the way it is. They hate us. They're going to attack us no matter what happens, no matter if there's a Republican, a Democrat, or a Libertarian, or a Socialist, or whatever that occupies the White House. They're going to hate us, and they're going to attack us. So we do have good leadership there right now, but that's not always going to be the case. We know that. So we've got to continue to fight to everybody do their part. And even the guy or the gal that works for McDonald's can do their part in this war. And that is, let's not forget we're at war, and we've been at war for 2 decades. And let's not forget that everybody can help and everybody can contribute.
Amen. I actually did a group, not for this cause, but for we called it the Amnesty Response Plan, because they were giving amnesty to all these illegals, and people were like, well, what can I do? You know, there's nothing I can do, you know. So we came up with the Amnesty Response Plan, and we set up a whole Facebook group and everything. And basically what it was is, there's plenty you can do. You don't need to do anything. If you could be, disabled, but if you have a cell phone with a Gmail account,
you
can make emails and phone calls all day long. And you can call reps and snail mail.
Yep.
There's a thing called a paper and a pencil, an envelope and a stamp.
Yep.
There's something everybody can do. You can start a radio show on Blog Talk Radio. There's things that you can do to get in the fight to make a difference. Even if it's just writing one letter a week to your representative. You know, call them. I used to say, call your representative's office so many times that when they pick up the phone, the call screen goes, oh, God, you again?
We have a little bit of time for that?
Yeah. We got plenty of time.
Okay, listen, I didn't want to just start telling you without, seeing what our timeline's like. But listen, I'd like to tell a quick story. And it may shock your listeners that pretty much everybody has watched movies about the military and military police walking into or busting into bars and hitting people with billy clubs and, keeping order and discipline of the military and so on and so forth. Everybody's seen movies like that where the MPs show up at the bar and everybody, runs out the back door, right? So think of movies like Pearl Harbor and so on and so forth, right? Well, there's a little bit of truth to that, but I'll paint a scenario for you. We have a couple of Marines who were based at Camp Pendleton, California, and they're out in a bar, and they're drinking like everybody else. And these are Marine Special Operations Marines. They are the top of the line in the Marine Corps. And these guys are trained. They're trained in first aid. They're trained in everything under the sun. They're trained in, firing weapons, anything, land navigation, anything you can think of that lets the world's greatest military go somewhere and win, these guys know how to do it, and they can do it really well. And so we've got these Marines, and they're in there, and they're drinking. They're not crazy drunk, but they're drinking. Everybody's having a good time. And so they get into an argument with a fellow, and, they outnumber the guy, so they convince him it's in his best interest to, leave, right? Well, I don't know what the argument was about, and it doesn't really matter, right? Well, at some point during the night, that individual, they broke it off. They broke up contact with one another. But at some point during the night, that individual got way too drunk and needed first aid. And he ended up, those two Marines ended up providing first aid for him and trying to help him, right? He ended up dying. He ended up dying in an alcohol poisoning kind of scenario. Well, can you believe that the Marine Corps is trying to punish those two Marines, those two Special Operations Marines, for that incident? And they're trying to court-martial those two Marines for that incident. And at the end of the day, the Marines provided first aid to the man. They tried to help him, but, they're not surgeons. They're not doctors. And there were just a couple of Marines in a very crowded area with a bunch of other people in it. And so they didn't even have to provide first aid to the guy, but they did out of the kindness of their heart. But because they were there and they were connected to it, because they're the ones that stepped in and said, we're going to do the right thing here and help, everybody saw them there and everybody told the criminal investigators that, oh, we saw those two Marines there, those two Marstock Marines. So if you – it's absolutely ridiculous. And I'll tell you, look, go to UAP.org and look it up. They're the Marstock Marines on UAP.org. The Marine Corps, under President Trump, nonetheless, I don't know what these guys are thinking, but the Marine Corps is court-martialing these guys. And they're trying to send them to Fort Leavenworth. And, you know, the president is an extremely, extremely busy man. And in my case, when he acted, you know, this he acted by exception in my case because we had 14 members of the House of Representatives, one United States senator, and two sitting governors, to include our governor here in the Sunshine State, Governor DeSantis, who were petitioning the president actively to get me out of prison, to let me out of Fort Leavenworth. And so the president actually, when he called me in Fort Leavenworth, and that was an interesting conversation, by the way. We could talk about that if we still have time later. But the president actually, he called me, and he actually told me, he was like, Clint, I'm going to tell you everybody that got you out and that worked to get you out. And he started reading off this list of people. And there were you know, over a dozen of them. And so, of course, I'm a little overwhelmed. But here's my question, though. Why should it take over a dozen members of Congress and two governors to ask the president to fix something for something to get fixed? Why should the military not be able to fix something itself without having to get the president involved? And so that's my question. And so that's where we come in with these organizations like UAP.org, and they come in and they partner with an organization in Congress, and it's a group of congressmen in the House of Representatives. It's called the Justice for Warriors Caucus. And essentially what the Justice for Warriors Caucus does is they essentially say, hey, guys and gals in the Pentagon, we're in general rank and admiral rank. We are watching you. So keep your life together. Keep it straight because we're watching you. We're going to hold you accountable. So there's not a lot of congressional type organizations that are doing that. And so that UAP.org is sort of leading that fight and partnering with the Justice for Warriors Caucus. That's something that's very near and dear to my heart because, you know, those guys are and gals are the ones that got all of the congressmen on board and the governors on board to try to get me out of Fort Leavenworth. And so now, right. You know, I had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago, Mark, I had the opportunity to meet these Marsoc Marines in the House of Representatives itself. We a couple of us were there, and a couple of the congressmen were standing outside. Believe this one. We were standing outside the floor of the House of Representatives where the impeachment hearing was going on, and we had a couple of congressmen, and one of them was going in and grabbing members of Congress and bringing them out there and asking them to come out there and talk to us. And so my friend Derek Miller and I, Sergeant Derek Miller and I, we would essentially just, you know, ask these members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, if they would consider looking at the Justice for Warriors Caucus. And so that there's a lot going on in this mission. But as you mentioned earlier, you know, there are missions with homeless veterans that need to be addressed that maybe you're in a city that doesn't have somebody addressing that. There are all of these different missions, you know, with mental health. But this mission of justice, this mission of, you know, legal malpractice of the military justice system being broken to such an extent that, you know, we have our own servicemen in prison in military prisons for something that, you know, state prison or state prosecutors and federal prosecutors have declined to prosecute. And so these are literally cases where the Army, or I'll use the Army for example. The Army will have a soldier who they want to charge with something, but they'll give the state of North Carolina, for instance. They'll give the state, and they'll say, okay, state of North Carolina, you can prosecute this guy first, and you can get all your stuff over with, and then we will take him into the military system and do everything we've got to do with him. Well, there are several cases and several that I met while I was in Fort Leavenworth where the state in that situation did a full investigation with all of the resources they have available at their disposal, and they said, there's nothing here. There's no evidence here, and there's no evidence of a crime being committed. Well, by that time, the military is embarrassed. And so the military comes in heavy-handed and says, we don't care about evidence. We have the ability. We have our own prison, and we have our own courts, and we pay our own judges, and we pay our own appellate judges. So we don't need anybody. We can stick anybody in prison that we want. And so that's what they do when they come in and they stick our servicemen in prison for essentially they're shaping the social atmosphere of the military. And what I mean by that is you have senators like Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York who believes there's this ridiculous this sexual assault campaign or problem that's in the military. Well, look, I served in the military for over a decade, and I served with a bunch of women. And I'll tell you, they're just as good as the male soldiers, as the male counterpoint. Some of them, a lot of them are better. But I'll tell you this, if there is a sexual assault that happens, then I'm going to be the first guy standing in line saying that we need to fix it and we need to make sure it never happens again. But I'll also say that I never once saw anybody get sexually assaulted in the military. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just means it didn't happen around me. And so they have these. The military has this way of shaping the social climate to make senators and congressmen happy. And so when you have a United States senator in New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, who is walking around fired up about a sexual assault epidemic in the military, what's the best and the easiest way to get her to get off their back? And that the best way is to start sending guys to prison for sexual assault. And so that's what the military thinks, and that's what they do. And so Fort Leavenworth is packed to the brim with servicemen who, from all the branches of the military, who are there for sexual assault. That the overwhelming majority of people there are there for sexual assault. And oh, by the way, Mark, they don't just stay at Fort Leavenworth. Whenever the prison at Fort Leavenworth gets full, they ship them off to the federal prisons to be roommates with drug dealers and gangsters and God knows what else. And so you have people who have joined the world's military in a time of war, and now they're in a prison cell with a drug lord. And so that at the end of the day, nobody should accept that. And that's why organizations like UAP.org are so important, because the organization itself is making sure that this stuff doesn't happen. And when it does, they're fighting it. And so I'm so passionate about them because they fought so hard for me. And I think that's something we should all pay attention to.
Yeah, I agree. Now, believe it or not, there's a lot of people who don't know actually your story. So you probably told it a million times, so you probably have an abbreviated version. So for those who don't know your story, tell them the abbreviated version of what happened to you back in 2013 on the battlefield with these guys on motorcycles approaching your position.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. A lot of people do ask about it. You know what? I'm glad they do, because it tells you that people care about things that are going on in this country. And you know, when we can – I'm one of the biggest culprits of walking around with my face, you know, buried in my iPhone. But look, you know, at the end of the day, that people are asking me the question you just asked me, it gives me a little bit of hope that maybe we're not completely lost in terms of, you know, people just only worrying about themselves. And so, I'd be glad to tell you as much as I can tell you about what happened in Afghanistan. So I'd like to really bring you to Kandahar Province, Afghanistan. It's the year of 2012, and we're right in the middle of something called, between the United States and the government of Afghanistan, it's called the Status of Forces Agreement Negotiations. And so what the Status of Forces Agreement Negotiations are, essentially – they say that, okay, look, Afghanistan, if we're going to send the United States military into Afghanistan to fight, then if you are unhappy with one member of the United States military, then you have to give them to the United States. You don't get to take custody of an American soldier whenever you think they may have done something wrong. And so if you can sort of – you can kind of understand, you know, during the Obama administration where he – the administration was bowing down to our other governments, you can kind of understand that, you know, it's a sensitive situation that President Obama was in and his administration was in. and the President Karzai administration was in as well. So you had civilian casualties happening all over the battlefield. And so President Karzai was putting pressure on President Obama. And he was essentially saying, hey, man, look, I'm tired of these civilian casualties. The parliament, the Afghan parliament, is going to make me kick you guys out if you guys don't police it up, right? And it makes sense. It's a practical argument. But the problem is the way that the Obama administration reacted to that. Instead of saying, look, we have great members of the military. We have the world's greatest military, the world's most disciplined, combat-effective military. We do not go out just trying to kill civilians. We take every precaution we possibly can to make sure that the people that we kill are bad guys. And we don't need the government of Afghanistan telling us who and when to punish. Instead of saying that, the Obama administration just bowed down and said, okay, yes, sir, President Karzai, we will do everything we can to fix this problem. You won't have any more problems out of us. And so what they then did is I just talked about the military's way of shaping the social climate and to make senators happy and to make members of Congress happy. So they can do that to make foreign governments happy too, because the military justice system, it's in the Constitution. The Constitution says we have to have a separate system of laws for the military. So there's no getting rid of it, right? But so what happens is when we have a foreign government that is mad at something that an American military member did, then the United States military is very, very well equipped to dispose of that. And the way that they dispose of that is Fort Leavenworth. They send the person to Fort Leavenworth, and then they send a representative over to Kabul, and they say, hey, look, here's a picture of this our former soldier in Fort Leavenworth, and he's an inmate now. He's a prisoner. See, we do punish our own. We do take care of our own business. And so during 2012, this agreement was being negotiated with the Afghan government. And so during that time, I was very unfortunate to be on the ground there in Kandahar province with the 82nd Airborne Division as infantry officer. And so, you know, it was a very tricky situation because only weeks before what happened, before I was actually on the ground on my patrol, my combat patrol, an American soldier went off of a military base and shot up a bunch of people. And now, a lot of those people were bad guys and bad girls or whatever, but you can't just go off and do your own thing like that, right? So the military was very, and the Obama administration was very sensitive in the first place. So just a couple of days before my patrol, another soldier engaged someone who turned out to be a civilian, right? So this whole status of forces agreement thing is very important because it was so big at the time in terms of the atmosphere, the social atmosphere. And so President Obama had people in the United States calling for him to, you know, crack down on civilian casualties. And then he had the president of Afghanistan calling him and saying, listen, crack down on these casualties or we're going to kick you out, right? And so, you know, we have to be there. I'll just say this. We have to be there. We have to have some people in Afghanistan or else they're going to get reconstituted and they're going to come here and we're going to have another 9/11. They will be here if we let them get regrouped and if we let them get strong enough. We've got to keep them on their knees or they will stand up and they will come here and we will have a 9/11. So President Obama understood that. He understood that. Unfortunately, he didn't like it, but he understood that that was the way it was. President Trump understands that. President Trump does not like it, but he understands that's the way it is, right? Nobody wants their country to be in a perpetual state of war, but that's just the way things are. So here I am in 2012, and we're in Kandahar, Afghanistan, and I'm an infantry platoon leader. Most of my deployment I spent in what's called a tactical operations center. And a tactical operations center is essentially the nerve cell of the entire brigade. So it's a big room, and it's got TV screens, flat screens all over the wall, overhead projectors everywhere. There's computers beeping, radios beeping, phones ringing, all kinds of stuff going on. And that's where the battle is really managed at the biggest level. And so I was sitting right there in the middle of that, and I had a headphone set on. I had three or four computer screens in front of me, and I was hooked into a radio, like a combat radio. And so most of my deployment, I was right there. I was right there plugged into the nerve cell of what was going on in sector. And so I had the unfortunate opportunity, very unfortunate, to watch some pretty grave injuries of American men and women in the world's greatest military. So look, I understand fully when I left that job to go out into the combat zone, into the platoon leader position, I understood fully where I was going and what I was going into. And not only that, I had been fully briefed for several hours, actually several days, by my dear friend Katrina, who was a military intelligence officer, and her expertise was studying the habits of the enemy where I was, right? I just got lucky with that one, right? And so I knew what I was going into. I knew what the historics of the enemy was in that area. I knew what the history of the enemy was in the area where I was. I could tell you, I could probably tell you back then, I could probably tell you almost everywhere that we had an incident with an IED blowing up or a mine blowing up or so on and so forth in my area, right? And every good officer would be able to tell you something like that because that's our job, right? Our job is to know the enemy and try to outsmart them at every step, right?
Yeah.
So here I am. I get promoted and I get moved out to become an infantry platoon leader. And so I go out. And the reason why I get promoted to go out is because my predecessor had been injured. They had stepped on an improvised explosive device and he had been badly injured in Germany at medevac. So I get that slot and I go out there. And one of the first things that my commanding officer tells me is that my platoon that I'm taking over is very ill disciplined. And then he has a lot of concerns about their level of discipline. And he has a lot of concerns about their level of combat effectiveness because they've been beaten up so badly. And so it's been a really hard fight. And so the areas that I was chosen to go into and take over was, and I can't look, a lot of military people are going to, you know, say stuff like this, especially Marines. But I was told this by my senior leaders. And that is, the place that you're going is the Hornet's Nest. This is the worst part of Afghanistan. So be ready and be smart. And so I knew that. I knew what I was walking into. I go in there. I take over this platoon that is just so beaten up by the enemy that they just want to go home. And they don't believe in the war anymore because the president of the United States, Barack Obama, did not believe in the war anymore. And he said it. And so there are all of these people, you know, that the morale of the troops themselves was very low. So at the end of the day, what ended up happening is I was in the platoon for 3 days, right? It was a little less than 3 days, to be honest with you. I was in charge of that platoon for 3 days. And so the guys in that platoon didn't know me from Adam. I was the new guy. And, oh, by the way, I was the guy that came in hard because I was ordered to come in hard and to try to straighten them up and try to slap them around a little bit, you know, metaphorically. Of course, I wouldn't go and slap and sword them, not General Patton.
Right.
But
right.
At the end of the day, I was the guy that came in and said, look, you know, throw some cold water on your face. We're at war here, and if you don't get it together, we're all going to die out here. And so, you know, it's time for us to get back in the fight. It's time for us to stand up like soldiers and fight again. And so that was my job, and as it, being one guy, one 20-something-year-old guy coming in when there are 40, 20, and 30, and 40-something-year-old guys who have already been there for months doing this job, that job that I had as the only officer there was very, very difficult. But I was well-trained for it, I was well-prepared for it, and everything that I had done in my military career had prepared me for that job. And so I came in hard. I started getting things together. I brought a bunch of assets with me that we had not brought, they hadn't been using for some reason. And so they didn't like, they had mixed feelings. They were like, this guy's bringing us helicopters, he's bringing us dogs, he's bringing us mine detectors, he's bringing us UAVs, he's bringing us all these things, but is he coming in here and bringing us all this because he's trying to say we've been doing it wrong this whole time? So that's not what I was saying. What I was trying to portray to them was, look, we have all this stuff available. Let's use it, right? Let's not just let it sit in a freaking storage shed. Let's use it. So
right.
At the end of the day, Right. At the, and that's what any good officer should do. But unfortunately, a lot of our officers don't understand that. And so when I come in, I kind of come in on a back foot because of that. And they had, again, they had been very beaten up. Well, so we go out on this patrol, and we're walking through what can only be described as a maze. It looks like an earth maze. There are two things. There are two areas that we can traverse, that we can walk through. One of them is a field of grapes, and the grape rows, as they're called, it's a picture, a wall of mud about 6 to 8 foot tall. And then there are hundreds of these walls right next to each other, and they're essentially big lanes. And you can walk down the center of these lanes, and there's on either side of you, there's a 6 to 8 foot wall, mud wall that's got grapes hanging down from the top of it that the grapes are growing in. There are hundreds and hundreds of these, right? And so the problem with that is that if you walk down the lanes, if you walk down the aisles of the grape rows, the Taliban knows that you're going to be lazy. And you're probably going to walk down the aisle of that grape row. And so where's the best place for them to put a trap, for them to put a booby trap, for them to put an IED or a landmine? It would be right there on the aisle, right? So being a good officer and a good leader, you have to make your soldiers, no matter your paratroopers, no matter what they say or how much they complain, you've got to make them jump over those walls and go the hard way so they don't lose their legs or their arms or whatever. Because at the end of the day, if they get overheated, if they're tired at the end of the day, at least they're not dead, okay? And so at the end of the day, I have to make the hard decisions as the officer on the ground to make these guys be safe and to get home, right? And so I didn't care whether they liked it or not. I didn't care whether they were tired or hot or whatever else. All I knew is that I had to make the best decisions that I could make to bring them home. And so when one of them, who had been a police officer in the civilian world, and I knew this because I had talked to him about it, when he turned around to me and he could see what was going on, he saw a motorcycle coming at high rate of speed, and he pointed his weapon at it. I remember seeing him point his weapon in a general direction of something. I couldn't see it. And he said, "Sir, can I fire?" And so I'm thinking to myself several things at that moment. I'm thinking, who in the world am I to tell a member of the world's greatest military that they cannot defend themselves in war? That's number one.
Right.
Number two is these things are very quickly occurring to you because there's a lot going on. And so number two is, I'm not going to be the guy that brings his troops home in a body bag because you made the wrong call in war. I'm not going to do it. And so if my troops are asking me if they can fire, then I'm going to say yes. Because at the end of the day, I would rather be sent to Fort Leavenworth and bring all of my men home alive than be home free myself and have lost men in war, period. And I would make that decision any day of the week, and any good leader worth his salt, his or her salt, would make the same decision. The problem is, with President Obama in office, people were scared to make decisions. But at the end of the day, it was a very easy transaction for me. Do I let the Taliban kill my soldiers, or do I kill the Taliban? And it's very easy for me. Well, with President Trump in office, we don't have to make that decision anymore because we know that we have a president, a commander-in-chief of President Trump that supports our decision. And he knows the war is very difficult, and he knows that these people are experts at blending in with civilian populations.
And he listens to the experts.
He knows it. Absolutely. He is smart enough to know that he needs an experts. Absolutely. And so I authorized these guys to these soldiers to shoot and at these Taliban and to engage them and kill them. Right? Now, I will say this, right, and I think I may have hinted to this earlier. Look, I believe 100% that if an American soldier goes off base in bad faith and says, "I'm just gonna do whatever I want today," then we should punish him to the fullest extent of the law. Because when the United States of America is operating in war, we are operating on an international stage where anything that we do as soldiers, as paratroopers, could start an international incident, could start a war. And so we've got to be very, very judicious with every single decision that we make. So as an infantry officer on the ground with 40 paratroopers under my command, it was very, very something that was very close to the front of my mind that I had to be very judicious with every decision that I made, because I didn't want to be that guy that started a war with Pakistan or a war with somebody else because of a decision that I made on the battlefield. And so you got to think right. about the relation. When you're an officer, you have to think about the relationships with the macro relationship with everybody else in the world and not just the United States. And so, you
yeah.
know, unfortunately, during the Obama administration, one of the other considerations that officers had to think of was, is the president going to send me to Leavenworth, to Fort Leavenworth, for making this decision, right? Well, now, thank God, we don't have to think about that. So whenever we had a soldier who went into the commander, and listen, it was the police officer, the former police officer, who he fired the first shot. Look, and he fired the first shot because I told him he could, but I only told him he could because the Afghan Army soldiers who were in front of our patrol, who were with our patrol, started firing first. And so here's my thought process in a couple of seconds that I have to make that decision. My thought process is this. These guys are Afghan soldiers. They live here. This is their country. They understand the language. They understand the culture. They understand body language. We are American soldiers
right.
from across the world. We don't understand a lot of that, right? And so if these experts on the local population see these guys as a threat and they start shooting them, then we might want to follow suit, right?
Right, that's a pretty good hint.
Right. And so all of these things are combining together in my mind, and I have a couple of seconds to make this decision. And so when my soldier turns around and says, "Sir, can I shoot?" I say yes, and I go to
Fire.
Fort Leavenworth for 20 years. I go to Fort Leavenworth for 20 years for that decision, and that is because we had a commander-in-chief like President Obama. So when President Trump, when he got all of the DNA evidence that was collected that proved that the men that I ordered, that I told them that they could shoot, those men ended up, one of them ended up being escaped from an Afghan prison. Another one ended up, all of the guys ended up being associated with and had bomb materials on their hands, explosive residue on their hands, and all of them had close ties to or actually had the blood on their hands of American and Canadian soldiers and Marines. So these are guys,
right.
these are bad guys, these are Taliban who were responsible for either directly or indirectly killing American soldiers and Marines and Canadian soldiers. And the Obama administration sent me to prison for killing them. So what kind of sense
That's
does
correct.
That make? So at the end of the day, right now, this organization, UAP.org, fought like a wild maniac to get me out of prison because they saw all this evidence. They put it all together, and they're still fighting to try to help me get my life back on track. But at the end of the day, though, we've still got people in these situations because President Obama, being the president for 8 freaking years, imagine the impact that he had on all these cases. Imagine the amount of people.
The reason I started this show.
What was that?
Obama was the reason I started this show. I was like, okay, hope and change. Sounds great. Let's see what happens. All right? We lost. Let's see. And when he got elected the second time, I was like, oh, my God, I got to do something. What can I do? You know, this is crazy. And so here we are. So they sentenced me to 20 years for killing the enemy on the battlefield. It's like eviscerating the president for striking Soleimani over in Iraq outside the airport. Destroying
right.
a guy who's responsible for over 600 deaths of military members, 100,000 PTSD soldiers, and like 10,000 amputees or something like that he's responsible for. And they kill him, and then the leftists are like, how dare you kill him? We're going to mourn this terrorist. The left in this country, I believe, have become mentally ill. I think they're crazy. This guy in Virginia. Did you see? First, I got to say, I got a friend. He's on the line. He was in Virginia today. But today in Virginia, numbers are coming in. 300 to 350,000 people went through Virginia today during that rally. Not one incident of violence. No one went to jail. No arrests. And they cleaned up the trash when they were leaving. They had garbage bags, and people were walking out with garbage bags, cleaning up the streets at their rally. And you got Governor Northam. The guy advocates killing babies born alive. And he advocates violating the civil rights of Americans by stripping them of their right to protect their life, liberty, and property from tyrannical governors who would sit there and watch babies die on a table. They have lost it. They are mentally ill. They tell us that we can't have guns and that they're going to come take the guns with a bunch of guys with guns. They tell us that we can't build a wall to protect the national security of our nation while they live behind walls. It's crazy. They've gone nuts. But I have a friend, Clint. He's on the line, and he's been all day in Virginia. I want to let him come in and give us a quick update on what happened, and then we can promote United American Patriots and a couple more organizations that you're affiliated with to try and raise awareness and maybe $2, $10, $1,000 or something. Maybe there's a donation page. But I want to bring him in real quick because he was in Virginia all day, and that day started early, and I'm sure he's tired. His name's Ed. He's up in North Carolina region. Ed, welcome to the show, man. Long time, brother. It's been a while. How you feeling? How's things? And what's going on?
Oh, man, it's been a rough day, long day, but it was a great day, man, to see all them great Patriots standing together. You know, in unity, and with no problems, not one arrest. And I tell you what, it was packed. It was packed, and it's a really good time, man. Meeting people up there, they were just fantastic. I met people from California. I met people from Washington State, and Oregon. They were all from all over. Great bunch of people, man. And I'm telling you, I'd do it in a heartbeat all over again for this country. These people were true heroes, man, to stand up there and travel from the distance that they did to stand up for our constitutional right, which I believe the Second Amendment is our most special constitutional right. Without that, we don't have any rights. We lose them all for sure. So
yeah,
it was a good day, and just standing from the neighborhood, I think over 300,000 people. It was really
from your own estimate when you were walking around. Do you think it was close to that number? Because that's the number that's coming out. 300,000 to 350,000 people went through that area today.
Yeah, well, I know people that have parked and talking to them, and you get talking to them, and they were parked, 15 miles away in some places, and it took them hours to get up to the Capitol. We didn't get all the way up to the Capitol. I figured because if anything was going to break loose, I didn't want to be right there in the heart of things. I just had a total knee replacement.
Right.
And I'm not going to run. And I'm going to have to sit there, and I don't want to be the first one to, to put the shot around the world. So I figured, I'm going to stay back some.
All right.
It was just quite a bit, man. It was just a perfect day altogether. But then I hear that, Northam on the way home, I guess he passed another law signed into effect that, you get a concealed permit that it's not voided. It's not good in the state of Virginia. So
the guy's a communist to the fullest extent. I can't believe this is happening in this. Even with this show of force, all these people that came together in support of the Second Amendment, he's still going to go anti-Second Amendment. Folks, the guy doesn't care what you think or feel. That's the point. That's what's really upsetting is with all those people making a statement, he still don't care. He's being paid by somebody on the outside like a George Soros and a Michael Bloomberg.
Yeah.
To usurp the rights of the American people that good soldiers like Clint and his men are fighting to preserve.
Absolutely.
And
I appreciate
him from Ed, say hello to Clint. Clint, say hello to Ed.
Hey, Clint, thank you. God bless you for your service, buddy. God bless you.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you so much for fighting a good fight there in Virginia. What an absolute tragedy for our country, I tell you. I kind of wish we could get more people, you know, millions of people from places like Idaho and Alaska and, you know, all these great places around the country to come to the aid of the conservative, the practical minded conservative people in Virginia and just camp out there until Governor Northam changes his mind on some of these stupid things.
They
had the recall petition booth out there. I wonder how many signatures they got today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't get to get up to there, but I got some pictures of a lot of people. They said it was over 3,000 or something that were inside the grounds. Well, I wasn't going in the grounds because I remember the Charlotte rally. And I just feel like, to me, it was like a crap zone. I wasn't even going to attempt it,
All right.
All over the place, and as we were starting to leave, walking across the street, and of course I'm who I am. I like to kind of mess around a little bit and kind of pull right in front of them, and they didn't say nothing. They did not turn their head. There was no smart remarks. It's like, good God, what happened?
They were surrounded by 300,000 patriots. And probably 250,000 of them were carrying, so they're not going to say nothing over there.
The buses, brother. I mean, when we were on our way up there, buses after buses after buses were just bringing them in. It was just totally bizarre. Right. And then when things were breaking up, there was some buses taking them out. And it was pretty wild, but... It was just a good feeling, man, to be part of it. And if it was ever called to do it again, the first one to be there, because anywhere in the country.
When you and I first crossed paths, it was like 2013, 2014, Operation American Spring, and this is what we were hoping for: Operation American Spring. Thankfully, we finally got a showing of force of great American patriots to make a stand for the Constitution and the freedom and liberty and American way of life that we deserve and that we need to preserve and hand that torch of liberty to the next generation so that they may be free. And it's guys like you who make it up to Virginia to make a show of force. It's guys like Clint and his men that he led on the battlefield who are putting their lives on the line so that we can be free. People like always say to me, Clint, you know what they say to me a lot of times, Ed? They say things like, those guys knew what they were getting into, and why the heck would they want to go all the way to Afghanistan to fight a war anyway? Why, I say, because this way we don't have to fight the war here on our shores. Let's bring it to them.
You're right.
We got, like Clint said many times, it's the greatest military force in the world. We can get anywhere in the drop of a hat and defend the freedoms and liberties we love here in this country without it coming here. And if we don't watch our asses and get this border under control, we're going to have crazy Iranians running around here, if they're not here already, getting ready to do some damage because we killed their holy general.
Come over them. They've already got those people over here.
That's
got
that
border. Yeah, brother.
I know you had a long day. I'm sure you want to get some rest. And I got to wrap up this show. I want to give Clint a little more of an opportunity here to promote some of his organizations that are helping veterans and other people. And I want to thank you, Ed, so much. It's been so long. You got to come on the show more. You got to listen more. It's been a while. You know what I mean? You're one of my all-time. Ed's been listening to my show, Clint, probably the whole time I've had the show. I've been on the air 6 years. I got almost 900 episodes, and he probably listened to 700 of them.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
We got lost up in Operation American Spring. We called on you to help us get out because they scrambled all our radios and stuff. Remember that? We called you to get some of the commanders to get us out of there. But, yeah. All right, brother. And thank you so much, buddy, for your service again, and God bless you and your family.
And hello to your wife. Tell her I said hello. I miss talking to you guys on the show. You got to call in again.
All right, bro. Definitely will. Definitely keep it up.
God bless. Peace, man. God bless you. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Ed Gonzalez. Ed Gonzalez giving us an update of what took place down there in Virginia today. 300,000 patriots walking away, no arrests, no violence, cleaning up their trash as they leave. Amazing. You go to a what do you want to call it, a liberal Antifa rally. They burn down the city, and they trash everything, and they leave a mess. And then they go, oh, my God, our taxes are so high. Well, if you didn't trash the place, we wouldn't have to raise the taxes so we can clean up the mess you left. People are crazy. But so tell us a little bit more about the United American Patriots and if people can link up with them and maybe donate or volunteer or do something like that, because I think it's a great organization, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And I one of the things that I say about what you just said, you know, more people ask me, they say, Clint, why in the world are the liberals the only ones that are out demonstrating in the streets and everything? And, you know, they seem to, you know, with the Women's March rallies and everything. And I say, yeah, it's because Republicans have jobs and we can't take, you know, we can't take weekdays off and go, you know, march in the streets in Washington, D.C. on a Monday afternoon. We got jobs. And so at the end of the day, somebody has to pay the welfare bills for all those people. And so
right. That's
who's doing it. The Republicans are doing it. And so at the end of the day, you know, you need to have an opposition. We don't want to be like Russia or China where everybody has one thought, you know, one like group think, and everybody is sort of told what to think by the state. We don't want to be like that, right? So we always need to argue. And arguing is a really, really good thing. I actually just wrote an article for America Out Loud that said that. Arguing is a very good thing in this country because it keeps people like Nancy Pelosi's crazy self in line. So, or God forbid, somebody like AOC, right? You've got to be, or Mitt Romney on our side, right? And so we've got to have people that are kept in line. We've got to have checks and balances and stuff. So I think arguing is a really, really good thing. But like you said, you can take it way too far. You can take it way, way, way too far. And so, like, yeah, I'm not surprised at all that there was no trash or there was nothing left in Virginia, that everything was like it was just pristine and like nothing had been touched. Because those are the hardworking people who paid the bills that were out there. They said, you know what, we're going to take this day off. It's a federal holiday. We're going to take this day off. We're going to go up here and we're going to do what we can do to try to fix this problem. So these are the responsible, accountable people that pay the bills in this country. It doesn't surprise me one bit at all that there was nothing, there was not a stone turned over up there in Virginia where they were. So I think that's something that makes me very proud to be a conservative American in this country. But yeah, to your question about United American Patriots, when I left Fort Leavenworth, I'll just kind of point a picture for you or paint a picture here for you. When I left Fort Leavenworth, United American Patriots had an SUV at the gate. And the CEO actually was in the prison with me and demanding that that I be released that night, because a little bit of backstory, and just tell me if we're running out of time and I'll try to abbreviate, but a little bit of backstory, the president called
close,
me at about
low.
Say again?
Running low, getting close, running low on time.
Okay, so essentially the president called me, and then the Pentagon said, we're not going to do it right now. We get it, Mr. President, but we're not doing it right now. We're going to wait till the end of the weekend. We're going to wait till Monday morning. CEO of United American Patriots goes in there, and he says, he crosses his arms in front of the warden's office, and he says, I will not leave without him today. The president just ordered him released, and you'll have to arrest me and put me in here with him because I will not leave without him, right? And so that is the kind of stuff that organization does. This is a Marine colonel, and you don't tell a Marine colonel no, right? It just doesn't happen, right? So that's the kind of stuff that organization does, and that's the kind of that's the reason why I am so blessed and so honored to be able to advocate for them. I don't work for them. I'm down here in Florida. They're up in Alexandria, Virginia. Now, I'm going to be with them tomorrow in Vegas at the SHOT Show, which is going to be great, but – And if there's anybody in Vegas listening, come out there and meet me. I'd love to meet you. But, you know, I don't work for them, but I will always support them for the rest of my life because I believe in their mission, and I believe that they are a strong organization, a faith, and they're an organization with very good leadership. So that's something that, you know, I would ask your listeners to at least go to uap.org, check it out, and see what's going on. There's a lot of great things that they're trying to do to help our military, and that's something that, it would be a personal favor for me if you would, your listeners would go on and look at MLP. And I do appreciate the opportunity coming on here tonight.
Absolutely. And it looks like February 20th at River Church in Tampa, we may have a chance to actually meet face-to-face.
Oh, great. Awesome. Great.
I hear you're going to be down there speaking, and Susan Price, a good friend of mine, Gold Star mother, and friend of yours. She actually said, meet to say hello to you from her, and she's probably listening. Susan, if you're listening, hello. She was tuning
in. I love Susan. She's the best. Susan may not like me telling people this, but I call her Warrior Mama. When we text each other on our phone, I call her Warrior Mama. And she probably thinks I'm crazy, but yeah, great people. A lot of great people down here in the Sunshine State.
Yeah, and Colonel Warship, we had him come on the show a couple times, and he's a great guy too. He's done some great things and great service member. He came on for my 9/11 memorial show because he was there in the Pentagon when it happened, and we wanted to get a story from somebody who was right there in the Pentagon. And we had we got a lot of naysayers. That place was hit by a missile. He's like, I was there and I was pulling bodies out of the fuselage of the plane. So whatever you think happened, forget it. Because there was a plane, and I pulled people out.
Isn't it just sad to hear people coming up with crap like that?
Well, it's sensationalized conspiracy theories that keep people interested, and maybe it helps them dig for the truth. You know, maybe sometimes these conspiracy theories will make people dig. That can't be true. I got to look. That might help in some instances.
Sure.
You know? And then you get people like Colonel Washer come on and tell you the truth. Clint, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show this evening. It really was a great time. You're always welcome on our show. I thank you so much for your service. And this brings me to a point in the show where I tell folks what's coming up next. This Thursday, I don't know if you're familiar with the story, what happened out in Oregon at the Malia Wildlife Refuge 4 years ago. Gentleman named Lavoy Finnegan was murdered in a snowbank by the FBI. Four FBI agents have gotten in trouble for this case. And his wife will be joining us this Thursday, 8 p.m. Jeanette Finnegan will be joining us to talk about the anniversary, I guess it's an anniversary, of the murder of her husband. He was killed on my birthday, so it's a very somber day for me because he was someone I looked up to. He was very smart. He knew the Constitution. He knew what our forefathers stood for. He knew what our forefathers sacrificed, and he was willing to sacrifice and ultimately gave the ultimate sacrifice, doing what he thought was right for our country. That'll be Thursday, 8 o'clock. Jeanette Finnegan joins us. That's going to be incredible. I've been following this case since it started. Since the Bundy Ranch situation, it's all part of that, all rolled into one, and it's pretty incredible. And she'll be joining us Thursday. And I don't know, Clint, if you know Dave Bray, DaveBrayUSA.com, good friend of the show. He put out an excellent album, and I wanted to go on. He put out a song recently called Survivors, and that song is about the survivors of those killed in service to their community, police service, military service. And every dime for that song goes to help family members, survivors of those lost in the line of duty, whether it's police, fire, EMT, or on the battlefield. So you want to head out on the DaveBrayUSA.com and look for Survivors and try to help the folks who are left behind when their loved ones are killed in action. Great stuff. DaveBrayUSA.com, Music on a Mission, Storyteller Edition. That's out now, and you can find Survivor there. I believe it's still up and still active. And he put out a great version of the Star Spangled Banner. And I like to end the show with his version of the Star Spangled Banner. So maybe stick around if you never heard it. If you heard it, you can hang up now, and we'll talk again soon. This is Dave Bray, the Star Spangled Banner. Don't forget, folks, my good friend Paul over at PatriotShit.com. And my good friend Rob, who created social media without the libtarded rhetoric, libertyrush.com. Go there today. And this is the Star Spangled Banner. Please rise with me, because at Patriot Nation Radio, we rise to the flag and we kneel at the cross. God bless America. God bless you. Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. Dave Bray, Star Spangled Banner. Folks, that's been another episode of the Patriot Nation Radio Show until we meet again Monday. Oh, wait, what day is this? Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, right after Conservative Perspective with our good friend James Bostic. Heard two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern. Make sure to tune into that. You don't want to miss it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. God bless you. God bless America. Thanks to our guests tonight, Ed, who gave us an update from Virginia, and Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. God bless you. God bless America. Good night. Peace.